The waves crashed softly on the distant surf line. Stars arced slowly above, and the dayside of the orbital was a bright line of light overhead. Shining in the starlight and the o-light, the silent, waiting bulk of the culture shuttle sat, its rear doors open, like a cave of safe darkness. Hawser had already tested the knots restraining his hands and feet. Shrinking his wrists wouldn't work. The rope, twine or whatever they had used, was tightening very slightly all the time. It would just take up the slack as quickly as he could produce it. Perhaps it shrank when drying, and they'd wet it before tying him. He couldn't tell. He could intensify the acid content in his sweat glands where the rope touched his skin, and that was always worth a try. But even the long night of Vavach probably wouldn't give enough time for the process to work. Pain isn't real, he told himself. Crap. He awoke at dawn, along with several of the eaters, who walked slowly down to the water to wash in the surf. Hawser was cold. He started shivering as soon as he woke, and he could tell that his body temperature had dropped a long way during the night in the light trance required for altering the skin cells on his wrists. He strained at the ropes, testing for some give, the slightest tearing of fibres or strands. There was nothing. Just more pain from the palms of his hands, where some sweat had run down onto skin unchanged and therefore unprotected from the acid his sweat glands had been producing. He worried about that for about a second, recalling that if he was ever to impersonate Craiklin properly, he would need to lift the man's finger and palm prints, and so would need his skin in perfect changing condition. Then he laughed at himself for worrying about that when he wasn't even likely to see the day out. He vaguely considered killing himself. It was possible, with only a little internal preparation. He could use one of his own teeth to poison himself. But while there was still any chance, he could not bring himself to think of it seriously. He wondered how culture people faced the war. They were supposed to be able to decide to die too, though it was said to be more complicated than simple poison. But how did they resist it, those soft, peace-pampered souls? He imagined them in combat, auto-euthanizing almost the instant the first shots landed, the first wounds started to appear. The thought made him smile. The Adirans had a death trance, but it was only for use in cases of extreme shame and disgrace, or when a life's work was completed or a crippling disease threatened. And unlike the culture, or the changers, they felt their pain to the full, undampened by gene-affixed inhibitors. The changers regarded pain as a semi-redundant hangover from their animal evolution. The culture was simply frightened of it, but the Adirans treated it with a sort of proud contempt. Hawser looked across the beach, over the two big canoes toward the open rear doors of the shuttle. A pair of brightly coloured birds were strutting around on its top, making little ritualised movements. Hawser watched them for a while, as the eaters' camp gradually woke up and the morning sun brightened. Mist rose from the thin forest, and there were a few clouds high up in the sky. Mr. First came yawning and stretching out of his tent, then took the heavy projectile pistol out from under his tunic and fired it in the air. This seemed to be a signal for all the eaters to wake and set about their daily business, if they hadn't already done so. The noise of the crude weapon frightened the two birds on the roof of the culture shuttle. They took to the air and flew away over the trees and shrubs around the island. Hawser watched them go, then let his eyes drop, staring at the golden sand and breathing slow and deep.
"Your big day, stranger,"
Mr. First said with a grin, coming up to the changer. He put the pistol into the string holster under his tunic. Hawser looked at the man but said nothing. Another feast in my honour, he thought. Mr. First walked around Hawser, looking down at him. Hawser followed him with his eyes where he could, and waited for the man to spot whatever damage the acid sweat had succeeded in inflicting on the rope round his wrists. But Mr. First didn't notice anything, and when he reappeared in Hawser's view, he was still smiling slightly, nodding his head a little, seemingly satisfied that the man tied to the stake was still well enough restrained. Hawser did his best to stretch, straining at the bonds at his wrists. There was not even a hint of give. It hadn't worked. Mr. First left to supervise the launching of a fishing canoe. Fui Song was brought out of the forest on his litter not long before noon, as the fishing canoe was returning.
"Gift of the seas and air, tribute of the great Circle Sea's vast wealth, see what a wondrous day awaits you now."
Fui Song had himself brought up to Hawser and was put down to one side of the fire. He smiled at the changer.
All the night you have had time to think of what the day now holds. For all the darkness you have been able to look into the fruits of the vacuum. You have seen the spaces between the stars, seen how much there is of nothing, how little there is of anything. Now you can appreciate what an honour lies in store for you. How lucky you are to be my sign, my offering.